Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Simone Riscala is the Deputy Director of Education at the Philos Project. As a first-generation American of Egyptian-Armenian descent, Simone has a particular interest in matters of religious freedom, culture, and the Eastern roots of the faith. Her graduate degree is in theological studies from Christendom College, and her undergraduate studies and professional background include marketing, communications, media, radio, and theater. She's a frequent guest on Catholic Answers Live and a faculty member of the Avila Institute. You can find her talks, publications, and podcast episodes on her website, culturalgypsy.com. And we're talking today about the burgeoning Jew hatred on display at some campus protests, including protests that are happening on commencement ceremonies, which corresponds a little with attitudes towards Jews in America. So how should Catholic leaders and institutions respond to this moment beyond politically carefully worded statements that neither offend nor solve and teach? One instructive precedent, perhaps, is the medieval papal bull Sicut Judaeus, which condemned anti-Semitic violence and even authorized excommunication for certain offenses. Simone, glad to have you in the program.
Thank you. Very happy to be with you today.
So I want to start by simply saying this. Sicut Judaeus is a very strongly worded document from the Magisterium that it doesn't mince words. And you put forth the bold claim that Sicut Judaeus could form the framework for how we ought to respond to anti-Semitism in the United States right now.
Yes, actually, my colleague Andrew Dorn wrote an article about that in the National Review this week, so I'm somewhat speaking on his behalf, but of course I agree with him that, yes, I think we can, as Catholics, remember our history of the clergy and hierarchy taking a very strong stand against Jew hatred and anti-Semitism, and use the words of our former popes to again speak today about this increasing anti-Semitism and Jew hatred that we are seeing very clearly right now on college campuses. It's very disturbing to our Jewish elder brothers and sisters.
So it really is concerning what's happening in the culture right now. We seem to have lost sight of the fact that everything we owe to what is good in society is owed towards, sure, Christendom and the Christian heritage, but at large, Judeo-Christianity. What we have in the culture is the result of God's revelation to his people throughout covenantal salvation history in the people of Israel, into the Jewish people, and ultimately into the new and eternal covenant in the Catholic Church. So losing sight of that has damaged us as a society, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I would completely agree with that statement. Many of our values, including the dignity of the human person, which is, of course, our core belief that each person is made in the image and likeness of God, this comes from the book of Genesis, the Torah, and that's those, you know, the Old Testament is part of our canon, our scriptures. And so as Catholics, we need to kind of revisit and strengthen a Hebraic worldview so mm-hmm. that we can continue to build the spiritual and cultural roots once again that we need for a thriving Judeo-Christian culture, if you want to use that phrase.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing we often take for granted, that we truly are a Judeo-Christian culture. We often underestimate just how magnificent the revelation of something like the Ten Commandments were, first to the Israelite mm-hmm. people, but in forming a system of law that now pretty much governs most of what the Western civilization understands to be objective systems of treating other people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's why when you visit our nation's capital and other government buildings, you'll see statues of Moses and the Ten Commandments displayed in various places to remind us of our roots. And, you know, John Paul II, in a letter he wrote, he said that the pulverization of the human person in the 20th century was an anthropological error mm-hmm. of the Nazis and the communists, that because they got the human person wrong, they were able to mistreat people. And so if we want to create a dignified culture, we have to first begin with the dignity of the human person. And that's something that comes from a Hebraic mindset. I mean, for those who are on college campuses, acting violently and you know, being violent to Jewish professors and students. I mean, if those same people were in not in the United States and in the Middle East, they wouldn't be treated very well. And they would, I think, perhaps, I would hope, reconsider the position that they're taking. They're really pulling the rug from under themselves. They're right. shooting themselves in the foot culturally.
Right. And your colleague, Andrew Doran, he highlights that, he coins the term here, an empathy deficit that we are seeing more and more in the generations that are rising. Now, this is due to many reasons: entitlement, dependence on an impersonal form of technology, dependence on impersonal media, and largely even a willful lack of discipline showed by the generation before them toward this rising generation.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I speak a lot on this epidemic of loneliness. You know, when Mother Teresa visited the United States, she said that she'd visited many poor countries, but the poorest country she'd ever been to is the United States, because it suffered from the poverty of loneliness, which she considered the worst suffering. And so it's not surprising to me, at least on a sociological or psychological level, that all of these young kids are kind of coming together for this cause. You know, we're made for countercultural living. We're made for sacrifice. We're made for belonging. We're made for community. We're made to take a stand, but they're taking a stand for the wrong things. But it's the strongest proposal that's being made to them, because we have become such a secular culture. We Right. want young kids to make sacrifices, to act radically, to, you know, even they're even some of them are going on hunger strikes, right? We would say that that's a form of fasting. You know, they're doing religious things, but
that's
they're
right.
doing it in the wrong way, because we have failed to evangelize these young kids.
Right. Even in the overt drive to cast out any form of religiosity in the interest of curtailing the strong man and standing up for the weak, really what they wind up doing is creating a religious system unto themselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember being, because I'm a child of Egyptian Armenian immigrants, and coming to this country and coming into an economically prosperous country and being very grateful for that, and the freedom to worship and the freedom to go to mass. But then being disappointed that now, when I'm in a free country where you can do these things, people really weren't as interested in doing them. And
right.
then, you know, going to a Christian college, and then seeing articles in the campus newspaper how intolerant Christianity is. And, you know, my family came from Egypt, and where we were second class citizens as Christians. And I thought, wait a minute, how intolerant is it for Christians to write about how intolerant they think Christianity is in a Christian college?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this doesn't seem intolerant to me at all. So when you speak of privilege, that's what I see as privilege.
Right.
That they, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're speaking to a fellow immigrant who came from a nation that treats, first of all, Christians as second-rate citizens, minorities as second-rate citizens, but over and above that,
yes.
individual liberty is subjugated in the interest of government overreach. All of these things were, I'm Malaysian, and all of was,
oh,
I
goodness.
Was Malaysian, I'm a proud American now.
And
yes. So coming to this nation, I echo those very sentiments with you, that we are blessed with so much, including religious liberty, individual liberty, the right to free speech, and it baffles me that these rights and liberties that are enshrined in our Constitution, not only taken for granted, but disparaged in the public sphere.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes to another point that John Paul II made, was that you know, freedom is something that's ordered to the good, and that just because we have these liberties doesn't mean that we have formed ourselves to use them wisely. And that was something that I know that he, you know, was disappointed in when it came to the West, that we're not under Nazi occupation, we're not under communist occupation, we finally have these freedoms, and yet we abuse them by not using them correctly.
Right. And this then really brings to a head I wondered as I read this article why we would go towards secret Eudaeus by Calixtus II when we have Nostra Aetate from the Second mm-hmm. Vatican Council. But what you're saying is completely right. We need stronger language because Nostra Aetate, while wonderful, is gentle in its language. And we need stronger language to get the point across.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I would love for Catholics to study Nostra Aetate. And we have at the Philos Project and Philos Catholic, we have a free online course with a Catholic professor and an Orthodox Jewish professor of Catholic students that goes through the document and the historical context of the document and how important that very short but significant document is from the Second Vatican Council. I think we live in a time where we somewhat take it for granted, even mm-hmm. if we've never heard of it or studied it. But I think it's good to revisit it. And I think perhaps the strength of the language in Secret Judaeus can be used to direct people to really look at Nostra Aetate and say, you know, this is, if we're going to be a part of the new evangelization, which is a very nice way to say that Christians themselves have forgotten what it means to be a Christian in mm-hmm. many ways, especially in the West, then we need to look at the roots of our faith, which are Jewish, and right. this is something Bishop Aaron has talked about, re-Judaizing Catholicism, something that Father Mike Schmitz has pointed out in the Bible podcast about, you know, echoing St. Paul, we look to the roots, we're not a separate people, we look yep. to the roots in hopes of greater fruitfulness. So I think if we really want to turbocharge this, we really need to take a look at that. We have to know the scriptures better, and we need to really take seriously the direction of the what's been outlined in the Second Vatican Council.
Right. So, Simone, we have just about under a minute left in the segment, so really 30 seconds, I should say. Do you have an exhortation to our listeners right now? Because many people listening are still on the fence about this issue, but there is a morally right position to be held.
There is, and I think, I mean, there's so many things I want to say, and I know we don't have much time, but, you know, I will say that I'll share this story of my grandmother, that when Israel went to war with Egypt, on the first day of the war, a grocer told to my grandmother's face, "Today the Jews and tomorrow you." So it has spiritual benefits, but also very cultural and even political benefits to look at the depths of our faith and our Hebraic roots.
Thank you so much, Simone. My guest, Simone Riscala, Deputy Director of Education at the Philos Project. Follow her work at culturalgypsy.com. We've been talking about confronting anti-Semitism here in the United States of America. For Cresta in the Afternoon, I'm Marcus Peter.